This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Who's more likely to win more games next season, Caleb Williams or all other rookie quarterbacks combined?
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
I'll still take the rest of the field because you know these teams don't sit these quarterbacks anymore. 2022 had 71 different ones. And 2023 had 67 different.
Today's guests, NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero, host of NBC's Weakest Link, actress Jane Lynch, plus your phone calls, latest news, and more. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Yes, it is. That's a fact. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Final week of March, and we have hit it. With our ground running, 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. At Rich Eisen Show is pretty much our tag on every single social media. YouTube.com/Rich Eisen Show for anything you may miss over the next 3 hours here on the Roku channel or this Rich Eisen Show terrestrial radio affiliate. We say hello to our Sirius XM on Odyssey and podcast listeners. Yeah, we say hello to those who are listening whenever they darn well please. All 3 hours are available through the Cumulus Podcast Network. And as I mentioned, 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. I love looking down and see phone lines lit up already just as we're getting started here on this program. Jane Lynch, a complete and total delight, is going to be in studio in hour number three. She's back with another edition of The Weakest Link. We're going to play The Weakest Link in the studio and find out who the weakest link is amongst all four of us. But we can kind of guess what that is. Yeah. I would say, you know, we take wagers on that sort of thing. But that's a very dicey subject matter these days.
I got to say, it might be off the board, Rich. I don't even think this is eligible.
Well, speaking of which, Ohtani is supposed to be speaking later on today here in Southern California I don't know what he's going to tell us. What is he going to say? And then, of course, who's going to interpret for him? Wouldn't that be wild if he's just like, one last time, a little Hamilton. You know, we'll have a little song about one last time. No, I think Mizuhara is way gone, and we're going to be hearing from Ohtani later on today. And, of course, if it does happen somehow, some way in the next couple hours, we'd get to that. But I do believe it'll be before the Dodgers and Angels play one of their freeway series games to wrap up spring training, exhibition play, and then opening day for everybody else. As we know, two games happened in South Korea last week, and that's where everything broke on ESPN and ESPN.com that Shohei Ohtani was in a little bit of hot water. So we'll see just how deep those waters are and what he's willing to share. That's later on. Good to see you over there, Chris Brock.
Hey,
what's going on?
Good, man. Good to see you.
DJ Mikey D is in D's Nuts. You're back. Good to see you, sir.
Back.
How are you?
I mean, I was here for 2 weeks straight. Rich, come on, back.
TJ Jefferson, how are you, sir?
I mean, you brought up Translator, and that's been making me wonder, man. What if this whole thing like Scarlett Johansson and Bill Murray, just something was lost in translation?
Yeah, I don't think so.
And we got it wrong.
Yeah, I don't think so.
It was just a big miscommunication.
Yeah, something was lost in wiring funds.
Yeah.
The question is did Ohtani know it or not?
I think there were 4.5 million things lost.
We'll see. That's the figure that people are saying right now. Who the heck knows anymore? Everything seems to be shape-shifting on that front, including my bracket. Listen, the NCAA tournament was fantastic this weekend. I really enjoyed it, even though it was very chalky. And what that means is the teams that were expected to win did win, although we did get some extra overtime. We got some extra contest time in. How about that game between Oregon and who did Oregon play? I should know that off the top of my head. Double overtime contest. That was a great one. Creighton. That was an incredible game. Creighton took care of business against Oregon. Needed two overtimes to finish that one off. The buzzer beater last night when Houston and Texas A&M were just going down to the wire after Houston had a 10-point lead with a couple of minutes to go. And then Texas A&M had a couple of bites at the last second apple, and then the second one bit. Houston took it in overtime anyway. Duke is now in the Sweet 16. How about Gonzaga advancing again? And Purdue advances, and not because Zach Edey is tall. Please don't say that, because that will be a problem for you, hearing from their coach, one of the sound bites of the weekend from him. So we'll play that later on. Right now, I have 13 of the Sweet 16 correct. 13.
Ooh, really?
You know who also has 13 correct? Taylor Mattingly Eisen, my daughter, has 13 correct. You know who has more than that? I believe he's got 14 correct is Cooper. My son is in the top 10 of the Rich Eisen Show Groups League. For a second, Xander was in top 10 as well. But I do believe, did not have Houston advancing. I think he predicted an upset right there. So it just we're throwing darts at the board in the Eisen household, and some of them are landing. I have UConn winning it all, and I don't think we saw anything this weekend to push me off of that at all. UConn and San Diego State is a Sweet 16 matchup. Illinois and Iowa State is a Sweet 16 matchup. 1, 2, 3, and 5 advancing. The same thing in the Midwest. Purdue, how about Gonzaga? Ninth straight Sweet 16 for Gonzaga. Creighton and Tennessee is a 2-3 matchup. There's 1, 4, 2, and 6 advancing in the West. North Carolina and Alabama. Clemson and Arizona advancing right there. And then 1 versus 4. And 2 versus 11 in the South region as NC State continues its run, rampaging through the ACC tournament, knocking off North Carolina to make this tournament, beating Texas Tech, and then taking care of Oakland in one of the more entertaining contests of the weekend. 11 versus 14. Did you see that stat as this thing was coming down to it? Did you see the stat that in the previous 11 versus 14 games, the 11 seed won 6-0. They're now 7-0. But all of them were by 10 points or more. This one, as you know, was particularly tight. Your guy, DJ Burns Jr.,
yep,
is on Tuesday's edition of the Rich Eisen Show.
Baby.
We try to get him today. He said he will do tomorrow. Cannot wait to see how he fits into a Zoom. It's going to be great.
He's recuperating today. That's a big man.
It'll be fun.
Like I said, I want to see DJ Burns Sr. What does dad look like if that's the son?
They showed him.
Oh, I missed it.
Big man. He's a probation officer. His mom is a middle school principal.
Wow, that's awesome.
So, you know, DJ Burns was always toeing the line. But dad, huge man.
And they'll be taking on Marquette. So
nice.
The only question is, you know, this is kind of like a kid's sort of word math problem. How many Shaka Smarts can fit inside one DJ Burns Jr.?
4?
3, yeah. I think 3.5?
3.5?
Yeah.
It's over.
You know, if the coach of Marquette was one of the smallest Russian nest egg doll inside of... All right, that's the way I view these things. That's our March Madness breakdown for you. But it was fun. Just lots of fun action seeing this stuff. And it just shows you once again how this is completely unbreakable. This tournament is completely unbreakable, that you don't have to follow the sport as much as others do. We don't really follow it significantly around here. How am I supposed to know who's on Drake? By the way, and when Drake's coach just became West Virginia's coach, the number of people that tweeted at me, "Let Larry David know I lost track last night."
You're supposed to know who's on Drake?
Yes, indeed.
Valparaiso.
So now they need a new coach. And Michigan, as I told you, was circling around Dusty May, and they got Dusty May.
Nice.
And I tweeted out, by the way, our YouTube video of our conversation with Dusty May last year when he made the Final Four and his journey from student manager for Bob Knight. Now I'm University of Michigan head coach. How about them apples? 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. The owners are meeting in Florida. They're meeting at the Breakers Hotel in Florida, in Palm Beach. And lots of news coming out of that. The AFC coaches spoke at their breakfast press conferences. And basically the way this works is they just put 16 tables out and an NFL head coach sits down at the table and as many members of the media, local, national, whatever, sit down and ask questions. It's just one big, huge question palooza. And tomorrow it'll be the NFC coaches. So I can't wait for that one tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We'll see what Mike McCarthy has to say.
I knew that's where you're heading.
Well, there's lots to discuss in the National Football Conference. And in the American Football Conference, it's the question of the free agent season, the quarterback carousel season. And it will be one of the biggest questions going into the regular season because it not only involves one of the more storied franchises with one of the more rabid fan bases, certainly waving towels. It also involves one of the more popular players in the NFL over the last 10-plus seasons, certainly up in the Pacific Northwest, where he once upon a time had a Hall of Fame career trajectory before leveling off and then bottoming out a couple of times in Denver. And it also involves the quarterback that used to be on a team that has first overall picks in back-to-back seasons, one because they earned it 1 year with a little help of the Houston Texans, and one because they made a smart trade to keep their young quarterback, and then now had the first overall pick again because the team that drafted first overall had such a dreadful year last year. And Justin Fields now is on this team because the Bears decided to use the first overall pick this year. I'm talking about, obviously, the Pittsburgh Steelers and Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. It just involves so many storylines in the NFL. What are the Bears going to do with the first overall pick? Who are they going to choose with the first overall pick? And what are they going to do with Justin Fields if they actually use it? And then what's going to happen to Russell Wilson now that the Denver Broncos cut him and incurred the largest dead money cap hit in the history of the National Football League after Russell had so much going for him in Seattle? And when's he going to start playing like that again? Can he play like that again? All of that is now in the smelting pot of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And head coach Mike Tomlin, who, as last week I kept saying, was apparently, reportedly, making sure his quarterback, his veteran quarterback, understood what was happening with the young quarterbacks on the team and giving him assurances, reportedly, that normally would be given to a quarterback that had been with the team 7 years, not 7 days. So you bet Mike Tomlin had a ton of people around his table today at the owners' meeting when asked about whether Russell Wilson has the so-called pole position in a quarterback competition, or is there no competition at all? Is Justin Fields flat out the backup quarterback? What in the world is happening in Pittsburgh? Here's what Mike Tomlin had to say.
Ideally, do you view that as a situation where you'd like to have Justin kind of sit, learn this whole year, or is he in that competition?
No, we're not resistant to competition, but as I've mentioned several times of late, I just think it's appropriate to establish positioning as we get into this thing. And the term that I've used is Russell has pole position. And why do I use that term? Because during this time where we're not formally working, man, I just think it's beneficial. His experience in the National Football League, his process that's been honed and perfected, talking about over a 12-month calendar, is not only good for him, it's good for teams. It's good for receivers, tight ends, running backs, et cetera. All the things that people that are really committed to winning do this time of year. Russell has those resources, man, that structure. And so that's why I say he has pole position, man. It just creates a synergy that I think is good for this time of year. When it's time to compete, we get in training camp-like settings and going to preseason stadiums and so forth. Obviously, Justin will be given an opportunity to show his capabilities.
That kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Okay.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Or it does not?
Yeah. I mean, to me.
That at this time of year where no one's in the building and you're bringing on a new offensive coordinator and you're bringing in a new set of quarterbacks, you might as well go with a guy who knows how to do it.
He's the vet. He's proven.
More than a kid who's never...
Still figuring it out.
Well, I mean, hasn't done it more than just a couple of years. And also, as he said, doesn't have the resources. I don't know if that means that Russ can afford to fly his receivers all over the country. I don't know if that's what he meant.
I'm sure that's not what he meant.
But I mean,
maybe tongue-in-cheek. Maybe he meant it. I don't know.
I mean, he could have the entire team have their own bathrooms if he flies them into Denver. That's not what he meant by resources.
Maybe he also meant, like, you know, Russ has all these coaches that he works with.
No, I just, listen, he's like, listen, we're not competing right now. We're not out there on the field. We might as well just give some form of a structure here to everybody. And so as he said that he totally intends to, once they get there, let's see best man win. I mean, that makes sense.
I still would be shocked if it's not Russell Wilson week one.
I don't know, man. I mean, Justin Fields, it's amazing how it went from he is worthy of being the quarterback of the future for the Chicago Bears, and the Bears fans love him, and he did finish strong, and he's 25, and he's still figuring it out, and it looks like pieces were falling into place, and things clicked, and he's worthy of that, and the rest of all of us figure out, hey, it's possible that he gets traded to Atlanta, and Atlanta's got the 8th overall pick, and then he winds up for a 6th round selection that could be a 4th round selection in next year's draft, and all of a sudden now he's hot garbage, and he's definitely a backup quarterback. And Russell Wilson, who did have improved numbers last year, but still, we're looking for the Russ cooking.
Similar to
the Seattle days, like, you think a 25-year-old who, you know, when the play breaks down, can rip it off for 50 yards is not going to potentially have a figurative leg up by the time, or a literal leg up, you know, by the time it all goes down? Or he's just going to, Russ is just going to have the neck up stuff down better than Justin Fields, and that will translate into the same version of what we just heard from Mike Tomlin, right?
I think the Fields finish strong is, we're letting our eyes kind of lie to us. Look at the numbers. I mean, he had 5 touchdowns, 3 picks, 82 passer rating, under 200 yards passing per game. He was sacked 3 times a game. Didn't play that great. I think just better than what he had played previously before he got injured.
Or the same, I guess, theory that Mike Tomlin just
passing game
the same
year.
Theory that Mike Tomlin put up passed out there, like, hey, this guy's got 10 years of the experience, 10 years of knowing how to prepare, 10 years of knowing how to get his team prepared, that this time of year it makes sense to give him pole position. Then the same thing will apply when it's time to actually start the season. And then it's much easier to go with him first and go to Justin Fields if he struggles rather than the other way around. I'm kind of coming around to what you're saying, Chris, and you've been saying it too, TJ. Meanwhile, what happened with Kenny Pickett? Ooh. That was asked of Mike Tomlin as well. I can only assume the answer. I cannot wait to hear the answer. Hit it.
In the days following our acquisition of Russell, Kenny expressed a desire for a change of scenery. As I had mentioned, we had been in pretty fluid communication with Chicago. After we got a sense of what direction that was going, then the dominoes started to fall, and we did the transactions necessary to kind of send Kenny to Philly and acquire Justin. We're excited about the guys that we have in Russell and Justin, man, and just really can't wait to get started.
Wanted to change the scenery. I thought he was going to go the hostages and volunteers thing again, but I guess it goes without saying.
Such a great line.
I got to say it again. I mean, this is the team. Nobody asked him about Hard Knocks. I would have. I'm telling you, this is the team. This is the team. I understand when the Bears get Caleb Williams, that's going to be a hot team, and they're going to get Caleb Williams. They're going to draft him. By the way, Jaden Daniels' pro day is tomorrow, and then it's Drake Mays after that. It doesn't matter. They could literally levitate, and it's still the Bears going to choose Caleb Williams. So I believe.
They would have to volunteer for Hard Knocks.
And by the way,
they're not eligible.
By the way, I'm aware of that.
Yeah.
I'm aware of that. I know they're not eligible to be forced.
I guess, I mean, the Jets were forced into it, but they
were
also
eligible. No,
everybody's
been forced into it. Nobody's volunteered for Hard Knocks anymore.
I know, but there are criteria now.
And I understand what the criteria are, and nobody's going to be volunteer for Hard Knocks ever again. It's just going to have to be some sort of application from the league office and maybe NFL Films saying, come on, what do you say?
Yeah.
Do us a solid. And I don't know if they're going to do that. But that said, the Bears are going to have some heat on them. Ryan Poles is on tomorrow's show as well. We're going to chat with the general manager of the Bears tomorrow. Can't wait to chat with him. Who else is going to have some heat? The Chargers will have some heat thanks to Jim Harbaugh. Some other heat might be Washington, maybe, depending on them drafting Jaden Daniels and then obviously Dan Quinn, and so much has changed right there. The Chiefs will always have some heat on them. Jets, when Aaron Rodgers doesn't run for vice president.
You know, announced tomorrow.
Apparently. So, you know, all of that. But nobody's going to have the heat on them quite like the Pittsburgh Steelers. With the fan base and the decisions they've made that are so out of character or off-brand, And then we'll see who they draft, too. Right now, they're offensive pieces together. When you add up, because Russ is playing for the league minimum for them, $14 million. The high man on the totem pole is Najee Harris with $3 million. It's kind of crazy what they're building. Let's take a break. There are some new rule changes, and the new kickoff rule change that's coming is so confusing. I looked it up. Tom Pelissero sent the new proposal, the revamped proposal, to everybody in the NFL media group. I looked at it. It's 10 pages long. I can't figure it out. The hip drop tackle is out, though. That's been voted on, and some interesting rule changes, none of them involving a fumble through the end zone.
That's a shame.
So Tom Pelissero, Tommy P, is going to be joining us from South Florida when we come back.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. With Indeed, everything hiring is all in one place, and it makes it so easy. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences each day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. The more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join the more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/podcast. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
I got an email today from the LenPenzo.com HR department. I find it really interesting. I'm an employee of one at this company, but somebody from the HR department sent me an email telling me that I had a raise. If I just opened the attachment, I could see how much my raise was.
Make sure you click on the links that are in there, too.
Oh, absolutely. They're safe. I can't wait. I'm excited.
Find out more by searching the Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
So, I like being right.
Period. Where are we going with this?
No, I mean, I like being right. I really, really, really like being right. But I can admit when I'm off. And, you know, my gut, you know, because I speak fluent NFL and I speak fluent competition committee, you know. So when the words were coming out of the competition committee about how the fumbling through the end zone, that they seemed to be turning the Titanic around a little bit, saying it was unfair in certain ways to the offense.
The punishment was a little too harsh, yeah.
I said, this is happening. And it didn't even make the final cut, which means that got rejected. That must have gotten thumped in the competition committee room, which is filled with coaches. What a big mistake. I'm telling you, this thing is going to come home to roost at the worst possible time, and people will not understand it. I'm telling everybody.
It happens 4 times a year. Like you can't just overturn something that just is so minuscule in the actual gameplay. Week to week.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take it happening, like Rich says, in a Super Bowl, a big moment. Then it's going to happen, and people will care then. But
I thought Troy Vincent was coming around on it, the head of football operations. I thought he sounded like he was coming around on it, and there should be a reverse touchback. A reverse touchback or where a 10-yard penalty loss it down, just like intentional grounding from the spot of the fumble.
Well, Rich, you know what they say about Rome. It wasn't built in a day.
But at some point, they started building the blocks, though. And I thought the blocks were building. I might have to start pounding the table louder. Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Listen, this is a big day in the NFL. And a lot of people may be like, what are you talking about, Rich? It's because rules are being changed. The way that the game is going to be officiated or reviewed is being voted on today. So the number of times that fans might get confused or go, when did that happen? Well, today, this day, okay? And so we're here on this show to make your life more understandable, and kind enough to join us once again on the Rich Eisen Show. He's on just last Thursday, back again now from the NFL owners meeting, membership, voting on rules changes. NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero back here now from Florida. Good to see you, Tom. How are you, sir?
Doing well, Rich. I think I nailed the backdrop. What do you think after the hasty run around here trying to find something relatively at eye level?
Looking good.
Only the best for you and the fellas in the studio.
It does. Yeah. It does look good. It does look good.
AI, Tom. It looks AI.
You look great.
Glad you found some shade during the commercial break. I was concerned about your SPF intake, you know, but I'm glad you're good. Good to see you. Okay, so let's just jump into it here, Tom. What has been made a new rule in the NFL today that you think will be most game-changing this fall?
Well, if you look at the responses by players on social media, it's pretty apparent that the hip drop tackle has struck a nerve, particularly with defensive players. And they ran about a minute-long video of various examples of plays. The one that injured Tony Pollard, that was among the plays, was on that tape. The people are probably going to remember the one that Ryan Tannehill suffered one of his high ankle sprains on. There's a specific type of technique they're trying to get out of the game, and Rich McKay keeps saying it's not all hip drop tackles. There's the specific swivel hip drop tackle where you grab, you turn to the side, and then you, what they say is, unweight into the back of somebody's legs or ankles, and that has a high injury rate. There was one hit on Geno Smith that people might remember from a game last season as well. It's a technique that the NFL, over objections from the NFL Players Association and over some skepticism that I've even heard here from some head coaches about how exactly you teach this technique, was going to ramrod this through. When Roger Goodell and Troy Vincent go up to the podium as far back as December and say, this is a play we want to get out of the game, you can rest assured they're going to get that out of the game. You've still got debate going on about the kickoff play. We could get a vote. I know they're back in session this afternoon. I think it's around 2 p.m. Eastern time. And then again tomorrow could be a vote on that potentially tomorrow. A lot of times if it's a rules vote that happens on a Tuesday, it means they realize maybe they don't quite have the votes yet. And so you might need to do some vote whipping at the annual reception that takes place tonight out on the lawn here. There was one other that popped up besides, you know, the Lions had a proposal about you get a third challenge even if you only get one right. That went through. The Rich McKay said something really interesting while explaining the hip drop tackle and also explaining the way that he was asked the question whether or not that would be potentially reviewable. And he just kind of in passing mentioned that they're also going to apply replay assist, meaning where the replay assistant, without a challenge, even if it's not inside of 2 minutes, can stop a play or can say, hey, in the official's ears, hey, we got that wrong. You got to move the ball back or the clock ran, whatever it might be. And he said, yeah, there's, you know, there's a handful of times a year where roughing the passer, where, you know, we think the guy's hitting the head and he wasn't, you know, so that's something we can use it for. I went up to Rich after the press conference and said, wait, are you saying this season replay assists now can correct roughing the passer? And the answer was yes, albeit in specific instances, because what they want to lean on is where you have clear and objective evidence. They have always, the competition committee of the league, have long been reluctant to make other fouls, anything that is subjective, reviewable. Because what are you doing? You're replacing one person's judgment, the person on the field, with the judgment of somebody else who's not on the field. So this needs to be as clear and obvious as the guy stepped out of bounds or the ball was loose, things that on tape they can see. But now if it's flagged as, hey, the quarterback got hit in the head and you see on replay he missed and he hit him here, the replay assistant now can fix that. They also can fix intentional grounding calls if, in fact, the quarterback was inside or outside the pocket, whether or not they were inside or outside the pocket. They also can look at that. That might seem like a small thing, Rich.
Oh, it's not.
But in a league where you take baby steps all the time toward these types of things, the fact that next year you could have a flag for roughing the passer picked up by the replay official, I don't know if that's a step towards something much broader, a sky judge or whatever. But that is something significant that even if it's a small number of plays next season, it could make a big difference.
Well, I mean, again, it does matter how it is presented, how it is officiated. And the way you just said is replay assists can pick up a flag. It's entirely possible a flag for passer, roughing the passer is thrown the replay is shown, the refs are still huddling up, and then come out of the huddle because replay assist gets in their ears and say, no, we just took a look at it, pick the flag up, and they'll just say, there's no flag on the play. There is no penalty for roughing the passer, and then we move on. That's a different thing than just roughing the passer. They mark off the yardage. Hold on a second. We're going to now go under the hood and take a look. That's a different ball of wax, and I don't believe it'll be done that way, Tom.
Replay assist is what happens. They can go all the way up till, I believe, it's 20 seconds left on the play clock.
Yes.
Where if there's something that's obvious, this guy stepped out 10 yards back, they're able to correct that. What they're now able to do is that flag is thrown for roughing the passer, and the stadium's booing, and the officials are huddling up. The replay assistant can look at that, can communicate with the official on the field. Did you see him get hit in the head? Okay, he didn't actually get hit in the head. Pick up the flag. There's long been suspicions, obviously, that whether it's 345 Park or the replay booth or some combination of them might weigh in occasionally on things that aren't on the books. This is, as far as I'm aware, the first time that on fouls like roughing the passer or intentional grounding, the league is flat out saying now, we want the replay assistant to do it if they've got that clear, objective evidence. It's not subjective. It's not, well, he didn't really drop his weight on him. No, it's got to be something as clear as there was not the type of contact that the officials thought that they saw. Pick up the flag, and we move on.
Love it. And next step for that would be do it for all 15-yard penalties, but, you know, baby steps. Tom Pelissero here on the Rich Eisen Show. Explain best you can, because, again, I just said earlier on at the top of our program, you were kind enough to send out the document that included the latest revision on the kickoff rule to all of us in the NFL Media Group email chain. And I popped it open. It's 10 pages long. So can you do your best to describe to everybody what is on the table and how you think it might get voted on with the kickoff rule, Tom?
It's funny, Rich, because, you know, when Rich McKay was talking about this, he basically prefaced everything in the press conference by saying, if you haven't seen this before, like if you watched XFL, which is a variation of it, if you haven't seen it before, it seems really complicated. If you haven't read the whole rule, it's really complicated. I've seen it and I've read the rule. It's still very complicated. The shortest way to put it out there, Rich, is you're going to have the kickoff. The actual ball and the kicker are still kicking from the same place on their side of the field. The difference is, rather than having the setup zone, the players on the kick return team and the kickoff team lining up on the minus side of the field, in other words, the side where the ball is kicking, we'll have a setup zone. It's on the plus side of the field toward the receiving team side of the 50-yard line. The receiving team's on the 35. Kickoff team is on the 40. What that does is that reduces the space and speed of the play. Because what special teams coordinators over the past several years have been charged with is come up with a rule that encourages returns, but also gives us a more palatable injury rate. Because this is another play where the league will always say there are much more injuries on kickoffs than any other play, because you've got these extreme high-speed collisions. So basically, you're going to have the kickoff is going to go over the top of both the kickoff and the kick return teams. There's going to be a landing zone where the ball has to go. It either needs to land on the ground there or needs to be fielded there. If you kick it short, that's a penalty. If you kick it over the top of them into the end zone, or you kick it through the end zone, that's a touchback. Rather than coming out to the 20 or the 25, this is the modification last night, it's now going to come out to the 30. They actually were going to have it come all the way out to the 35-yard line. But basically, the theory I'm making at the 30 instead was there's going to be times in the game where you just don't want to risk the big return. And so you need to have some slightly less punitive way to just kick the ball over everybody's heads and start the next possession here. You can expect, by virtue of the fact that the kickers are being legislated to put the ball in play, you're going to have more returns. The skepticism, and I talked to a lot of head coaches, Rich, over the weekend. We did a bunch of sit-down interviews for NFL Network, and then just talking to people in the restaurants, maybe the bars at night, you know how these league meetings go. I've heard a lot of different, you know, versions of the unintended consequences of this. Maybe the most intriguing of them was one coach who said, you have basically like we're playing cover zero, but on a kickoff. If you have everybody lined up 5 yards apart and there's nobody behind, then if the kick returner penetrates that first line of defense, you're gone. We could end up having a ton of kick return touchdowns, and that play could end up being unevenly weighted in terms of its impact on the outcome of the game. So then we'd be going from a completely dead ceremonial play, as Troy Vincent put it back in December, to a play that you might have a kick return multiple times every Sunday. And I'm not even saying that that's a bad thing, but coaches are always wary of, you know, de-weighting any particular part of the game or adding added weight to it here. It'll be interesting to see. That's all part of the discussion. That's why, unlike hip drop, which, like I said, was destined to be voted through no matter what, I'm taking a little bit more time. I would imagine there's going to be some further conversations. There could even be tweaks because, Rich, the other thing that this new kickoff rule, what they're calling the NFL hybrid kickoff, because, of course, they don't want to call it the XFL kickoff rule. One of the things that they did not change was the onside kicks. The onside kicks are going to look exactly like what they looked like over the past couple of years, which, based upon how rare it is for a recovery, you still don't really have the opportunity to recover a kick. Now, on top of it, you can't surprise anybody because you have to declare it because the formation is different. And the Eagles' 4th-and-20 alternative to the onside kick got voted down for like the 8th year in a row.
Well,
so something's got to be done about the onside kick, but they're trying to change and fix the broader kickoff play first.
I do love the Eagles keeping on trying on that, you know, but and as much as I'd love to see it, and we talk about it here all the time, that we'd love to see a 4th-and-20 play. The issue is, though, that you can't is figuring out what if there's a defensive penalty. You know what I'm saying? Like, so that suddenly now it's a first down. If it's just one hold play, one illegal contact play, why wouldn't somebody just always pass, interfere with the receiver if there is no defensive penalty thrown, right? Or there's no threat of a defensive penalty if you do remove it and make sure that it's a 4th-and-20. Like, there's no answer to it. I got Tom Pelissero here on the Rich Eisen Show. There's one other rule that did get passed that I'm wondering if you can explain to me. Allows for an enforcement of a major foul by the offense prior to a change of possession in a situation where there are fouls by both teams. Well, I've read that over and over and over again. I'm sure you've spoken about it with somebody that knows. What is that, Tom? What's the scoop there?
Put it this way, Rich. That one is so nuanced that Rich McKay in the press conference said, "That's a Walt Anderson thing. I'm not even going to try to explain it." Huh. It has to do with whether something is an offsetting foul versus a foul that's then enforced post-possession. It's a complicated thing that doesn't come up all that much.
Okay.
People who have probably been watching the NFL don't even know why things were enforced one way to begin with. This just kind of simplifies things in terms of how they walk off various penalties.
I appreciate that. In the few minutes I have left with you here, whose table did you go up to today in the AFC? Because you can't cover the whole darn thing. There's 16 different coaches speaking at the same time. Just to give you, give everyone a glimpse on what you think the story is or was this morning. Who'd you speak to today?
Well, I think Mike Tomlin was one that was notable because the first time that he had talked since the acquisition of Russell Wilson, as well as the trade for Justin Fields. He left the tiniest bit of wiggle room in terms of what I've reported, what other people have reported, which is that Russell Wilson is the starter. But Tomlin said the words I use are pole position. He's in the pole position. Tomlin said, I think it's important to kind of, set your depth chart, people to know what their roles are going into the offseason. He said Justin is going to get the opportunity when it comes time for training camp to show his abilities, is what Tomlin said. So in essence, Fields is going to get reps, but this is not going to be a split in the reps, alternating series type of a thing. Russell Wilson goes in as the starting quarterback, as I've reported. And then Justin Fields also is, of course, going to get opportunities. And you would think Arthur Smith is going to be dreaming up some things you might be able to do with him in the red zone. Jim Harbaugh, definitely worth seeing. I'm trying to remember back. It's been close to 10 years since he was an NFL coach, but it felt like he was really engaging and wanted everybody to come over and was enjoying answering questions. One of the best ones to him was, he was asked about Keenan Allen and, what was it like and why they decided to trade him. And he goes, "Oh, $23 million a year living in Chicago? Who's got it better than Keenan Allen?" And that was kind of how he answered the question. Okay, well, he got a lot of money that he wasn't going to make from the Chargers. Gets to go to another team. And, he seemed like he was pretty happy about that. He was also saying, over and over, maybe he's trying to will this into existence, but hey, there's rumblings that maybe the top four picks will all be quarterbacks, which of course would mean your guy, JJ McCarthy, and his guy, Rich, would probably be the fourth one who's getting up there. Well, then Harbaugh said, we basically have the number one pick because they're sitting there at number five. That's going to be a fascinating story to watch how the top of this draft plays out. Sean Payton, the Broncos coach, said, he does think it's realistic that they could trade up. Obviously, they're not exactly rich with picks. right now, but they're not completely depleted either, despite all that they gave up to get Sean Payton and, of course, Russell Wilson before him. So the Broncos are the one team that on paper, I think you have the least idea of what exactly they're going to do at quarterback come September, but you've still got some runway as we lead up to this thing. And then there were some other various updates around the room. You know, Joe Burrow, it sounds like, making good progress returning from his injury. Robert Saleh said Aaron Rodgers should be ready prior to the start of spring workouts, which makes sense since he was, you know, if they'd made the playoffs, Rodgers was fully intending that he might be able to get out there and, you know, try to do something in January coming off that ruptured Achilles tendon. So there's obviously a lot going on in that room. You're kind of, you know, catching bits and pieces of various conversations, but it's a quarterback driven league. And with some of the quarterback movement, Rich, that we have seen so far within the league, there's still a lot more to come just because there are a lot of good quarterbacks at the top of this draft. And there's a bunch of quarterback needy teams all drafted in the top round one.
Last one for you, Tom Pelissero. Friday night, one of the best defensive players in the league. We saw Legarius Sneed make so many plays for the Chiefs, including the one that knocked the ball loose out of Zay Flowers' hands in the AFC Championship game when the Ravens were trying to make it a one-score game. The Chiefs franchise tag him. Why did they trade him away? And why was the compensation a swap of seventh round draft choices this year and a third next year for one of the best defensive players in the NFL?
The price tag was high in terms of the contract, Rich. He wanted to be, well, Jerry wanted to be the highest paid cornerback in the NFL. We don't have the full details on that contract yet, but certainly he got a top of market type of deal. So it's a win for Tennessee to get a player like that. A lot of times the contract demands are going to impact the compensation. The way, though, that my understanding is the Chiefs looked at this was, you know, they love Legarius Sneed as a player and a person. He's been a huge contributor for them, but they needed cap space. They immediately cleared that entire, I think it was about a $19 million tag. That's off the books. So now they've got more spending power right now to potentially do some different things. And yeah, they could have gotten a third round comp pick by having Sneed play this year on that tag and then losing him in free agency next year. But the thing is, it's not like you get an automatic pick. It's based upon your free agent gains and losses. So if the Chiefs then next offseason had a couple of needs and signed a couple of guys, they would never get that pick. So instead you lock in what effectively would have been your third round comp pick in 2025. You get that right now. There's also, as you mentioned, that swap of sevens here. And you have additional cap space, which, listen, if anybody has earned the right to move on from marquee type players for the betterment of the entire roster, it's Andy Reid and Brett Veach. Same thing a couple of years ago at this meeting. I remember talking to Veach about trading away Tyreek Hill at this point. The math was very similar, which was the contract number got to a certain point where they felt like, you know what, we can get picks for Tyreek Hill and we can clear all this money off the books. Well, where are they at 2 years later? They spent a lot of that money on the defense. They won a couple more Super Bowls here. It'll be interesting to see with a little extra pocket change here over the next month leading up to the draft. What potentially could they add in Kansas City?
Tom, you're the man. Thanks for making us smarter. Get on inside. Appreciate the time. And I look forward to seeing you down the road. Appreciate it, Tom.
Great, Rich. You got it.
Tom's going to do the NFL Insider Show on NFL Plus at the top of this hour, 1 Eastern time. Check him out with Ian and the rest of the gang. Let's take a break. There's that one thing that he just mentioned about the eye in the sky, NFL assist, replay assist, helping out on roughing the passer calls. Thank goodness for that. I do have one fair warning to give. That's next. This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Title Transference aired October 27, 2004. Director James Marshall, writers Todd Slavkin, Darren Swimmer. I really like this episode, and I'm surprised that you don't like it as much as you thought you did.
I actually respect your opinion more than I respect my own in general. When you say things are good and I check them out, they are.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Hi there. Sorry for the interruption, but are you enjoying this show on Google Podcasts? You should know that the Google Podcasts app is going away this spring. That's right, going away, gone as in no longer available. You can still enjoy this show elsewhere, though. Try out Spotify or Amazon Music, or maybe TuneIn is more your style. Whatever app you switch to, be sure to follow so you never miss the next episode. And thanks for listening, wherever you listen.
is the most, in my mind, rewatchable movie there is.
Oh, Fugitive? Does it hold up or what?
It does. We wanted, on behalf of fans of the film, thank you for catching the switching of the samples.
Oh, the liver samples?
Without you.
You are welcome.
RG90.
You know?
Wow.
Harrison Ford, perhaps the most beat up movie star of all time.
Yeah,
he gets his.
Oh yeah, well he does his own stunts too. I mean, that's his own damn fault.
Did you do your own stunts?
I did all my own stunts. I actually handled the liver samples with these fingers and ungloved.
Your character in 40-year-old virgin Paula was originally written as a male character.
Yes, indeed, it was written for a man, and then with my eternal gratitude, Steve Carell's wife, Nancy Walls, who's a wonderful actress herself, said, because I knew them from Chicago, said, you have a lot of men in your film. Why don't you read Jane for the store manager? And so we improvised together and we had a lot of fun. And Judd Apatow said, oh, we'll cast her. So I'm very grateful to that whole crew of people for giving me that job.
Do you remember the song you sang in that?
Yes, I do.
In Spanish, can you?
Oh, absolutely. I'll just tell you right away that this is from an ALM Spanish dialogue, or diálogo, as you call it. And it's...
Yes.
And it's a dialogue, and it goes like this. Cuando arreglen mi cuarto, no encuentro nada. ¿Dónde va con tanta prisa al partido de fútbol? Thank you. And it means whenever I clean my room, I can't find anything. Where are you going with such haste to a football game? It's not romantic at all.
No.
Obviously.
But the way it sounds.
Yeah, it's the way you deliver
that's
it.
That's it. Yes, Jane Lynch returns, third hour, back here on the Rich Eisen Show. Listen, in the same way that I'm highly disappointed that the NFL competition committee is not changing the fumbling through the end zone rule that I find a scourge on the sport, Chris Brockman feels exactly the opposite. In the same way I'm disappointed in that, at least something I've been pounding this here table about for a couple of years is to use replay assist. Again, the NFL doesn't have a sky judge, which is a set of eyes that watches the game and buzzes in and says, you missed this or call that. I do believe your UFL
yes,
has that.
Saturday and, yes, Sunday both.
Okay. And yep. So that's still a bridge too far for the NFL. A bridge too far that there's somebody watching the game and is essentially an official, an extra set of eyes. But the NFL does have that for did somebody step out of bounds that they missed or somebody's knee went down and then got up and kept running and they wind up giving the runner the full yardage after his knee was down. Then, oh, no, wait a minute. His knee was down. Let's go back to that spot. Let's make sure the clock is right. You get that sort of stuff that's helpful, spotting the football. And I said, why not use that to help out with the roughing the passer calls? And I also said the 15-yard roughing calls just in general on the field, where a defender hits somebody in the proper spot, a flag comes out, and it's called for roughing. And it's like, wait a minute, there was no contact with the head or neck area. The guy actually did have a perfect form tackle, and they, on the side of caution, because the officials on the field are the thin blue line, they are the ones who are out there adjudicating the matter, not just to make sure things are right, but also for player safety. They're the ones in real time putting the player safety rules in effect. Okay, and so sometimes the flag's going to come out, they think that it looked pretty violent, that it must have been illegal, and then we find out on replay it wasn't. Why not use Sky Judge for that? Of course, you should never use Sky Judge, in my opinion, that you missed it and put a flag on the field. If you have thrown a flag, those who are eyes in the sky who do see a replay should be able to, because you're already communicating to the zebras on the field about whether a knee's down or a toe's out of bounds or not. You can get in their ear and say, pick the flag up while you're discussing it. Or after you throw a flag for roughing the passer, be sure to mill about for a while. You know, how you see your kids in a school play, they're milling about in the backyard, in the background. I'm not saying, they should, overact like some children do, not mine. But I'm just saying, just mill about so they can get the replay viewed in the eye in the sky and then get in the ear and then pick the flag up. And it does appear Tom Pelissero said he spoke to Rich McKay after Rich McKay made an offhanded remark about this in his press conference today. The head of the competition committee, the chairman, Rich McKay, told him that replay assists will now be permitted to correct certain types of incorrect calls for roughing the passer and intentional grounding. Hey, listen, you called the flag on intentional grounding because you said he was still in the pocket. He wasn't. Or you thought that the ball did get past the line of scrimmage. It didn't get past the line of scrimmage, and it did. I love this thing. I love it. My one pushback would be, is make sure everyone understands what is reviewable by the sky judge or replay assist, pardon me. Make sure you know. And also, make sure that the refs mill about long enough for them to get in the ear to pick the flag up. So it's not like flag's thrown, you march off the yards, wait a minute, hold on a second, we're reviewing the play. No, you review it quick enough so you can, the refs will then go on and say, you know, either say after further review or just say where there is no foul on the play for roughing the passer. There is no foul on the play for intentional grounding, and you pick the flag up and that's it. The reason why I say it's important in the manner in which it is executed is because everybody thinks everything is fixed now. The Ohtani stuff makes it even worse. Everybody's gambling on whether this is going to be a run or it's going to be a pass or this is going to be a strike or this is going to be a ball or this is going to be a basket or it's going to be a turnover. Everybody's betting on everything and everybody's like hyped up watching these games and everybody thinks the fix is in. And if you don't see somebody going under a hood, which they don't do anymore, or stand there with some guy holding a tablet or some lady holding a tablet, then you think that somebody in New York City is making a thumb on the scale decision to screw you out of your money. That's the only thing I will say. And I will just tell people who thinks that it's fixed. There's nobody in New York City that has any idea of what you've bet on. Nothing. Doesn't care. They don't care. They want to make sure it's right, which is why this wrinkle is being put into place. And I think it's great. I think it's great. But in this day and age, everybody's so hyped up on gambling that they think a fix is in. And the replay assist, if you don't let fans know that we're reviewing it and it suddenly gets reviewed, and then sometimes the replay assist doesn't chime in for stuff it's supposed to, and it drives fans nuts. For instance, if replay assist is supposed to help out on spotting the football, remember the Rams lost on a spot of a football on a fourth down late in the game when they didn't have any challenges left and it was outside the two-minute warning and the replay assist didn't chime in?
Right.
Well, aren't they supposed to chime in for that sort of stuff? So you got to work on the consistency and you got to work on the actual understanding of the fan base. And I'm here to help. I'm here to help. Because again, as much as everybody thinks the fix is in, nobody in the NFL is fixing a game like that at all or fixing a game in any way, shape, or form. Take a look at what's going on with Major League Baseball with the most popular, famous player right now. You know how many people are filling up my Twitter timeline? Like, back in 3 years ago, Ohtani gave up 7 runs, and the line was this. Right. You know what I mean? Like, everybody is, like, reverse-indexing this thing to see when he cheated.
Somebody had a
'cause you're assuming he is, and it's totally crazy right now. And the last thing the NFL wants is that. They want to get it right. And this is the way to get it right, and I'm glad they're getting it right. I just hope they get the execution of it down pat. Hour 2 coming up.
Hey, everybody. This is Dan Bespris, host of Fantasy NBA Today, a daily fantasy basketball podcast. We cover every box score from every game, every day, plus bonus shows on buy low opportunities, players to stash, schedule analysis, and really anything you could need to smash your league into deliciously tiny pieces.
Catch the Fantasy NBA Today podcast, part of the Believe Network, on YouTube or wherever you listen.